I bring up my foolishness from childhood because I want you all to be aware of the impact of how family dysfunction and family conflict mismanagement impacts how you show up in other parts of your life. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Fast Forward Podcast. We are continuing our conversation on conflict management. And for today's episode, I actually want to continue the talk on strategies because I was thinking about when folks manage conflict, we talk a lot about style and personality, but then we don't always measure outcomes. And so I thought it was good to spend some time discussing that. Now, as a part of the conversation on outcomes, outcomes focus on performance, productivity, and behavioral change. Again, productivity, behavioral change, and performance. When you think about what performance means, performance is essentially how you succeed or fail. And especially in the context of work, actually, I'm going to look at work and family because I think that's important because families do perform. That's a whole other conversation. When you think about work performance, work settings where people get along and y'all have fun and you're very social, but you don't get anything done, that leads to almost as much conflict as environments where people do a whole lot but hate each other. I think sometimes in jobs, we lose the plot. Like there are some teams that is very clear what performance looks like. Sales will be a really good one. Some aspects of marketing as well, because you can count how many impressions did we have? Did we film all or produce all of our campaigns? IT, especially help desk, that's very easy to calculate. Did you resolve all the tickets? How long did it take you to answer the call? How long is it taking you to respond via email or whatever the case may be? But there are other departments where it's very difficult to calculate what performance, good performance looks like. HR is one. Finance is another, especially certain aspects related to, like, let's say FP&A, financial planning and analysis. Bookkeeping is different because it's like, okay, if it's accounts payable or accounts receivable, did we pay all the bills? Did we receive all the bills? Did we respond appropriately, et cetera? But if you work in a department or a function that it is more difficult to calculate what performance looks like, as the leader, you will have to do that yourself and then communicate that appropriately to the team. Success should be, it should be layered. So you have just the overall vision of what successful performance looks like for your department, but then it should be broken down by annual performance, quarterly performance. And again, if it's already been prescribed and baked into the business's strategy, cool, rock with that. But if it is not, as the leader, you need to come up with that because the definition of good performance is what is going to help ground the team in the moments where conflict is quickly escalating. And so even when you're assessing who is wrong, who is right, the validity of majority opinions, because remember we talked before about Hegelian versus Lockean theory, right? When you're doing all those assessments, performance is the great standard by which you measure and assess arguments. Because if the standard, for example, is we respond to all emails within 24 to 48 hours, and most of the people on the team are consistently responding in 96 hours or even longer, at that point, it doesn't matter that it's the majority. The majority is incorrect because that's the standard. Now, there could be a million reasons why it's taking longer than expected. But the standard is the standard. And so, again, that performance standard, defining performance, communicating performance, that can help eliminate or at least mitigate a lot of conflict. You also want to look at productivity. I've spoken several times on the podcast about how important it is to just get stuff done. Y'all do not understand how much I hate teams that is constant swirl. I actually just had a conversation with a client recently, and I was like, nothing is getting done. Like, it's the plan and the plan of the plan, and then we have concepts of a plan, and then we got all this other stuff going. What is getting done, and is the stuff that's getting done actually relevant to the overall vision? If we said we're trying to go from point A to point G, are we at B at any point? Did we skip C? So why? Are we going to F and then coming back to D? What is going on? Like, why are we not getting stuff done? And I had to check myself because I was like, okay, girl, you kind of crashing out. But I was mad because I'm like, I want us to get stuff done. I bring up productivity as such a sticking point because bad actors, agitators, disruptors, troublemakers, the quiet influencers in a negative way, they thrive in ambiguous productivity. They love it when you're not getting stuff done and it's just a flurry of activity leading to nothing. There's a really fun meme, and I've seen so many people recreate it, where it'll be like, you know, that one coworker who's always busy but not doing nothing, and everybody else is like, it's like a construction site or something, so everybody else is hurriedly putting stuff together or hammering things or, you know, moving heavy equipment, and they just running back and forth, and then they stop and get something to drink like they so tired. And it's funny because it's like, dude, this looks so ridiculous. But in the comments, if you ever see an example of this, everybody is like, oh my God, it's like half my coworkers. Again, bad actors love when you have a flurry of activity that leads to almost no productivity. They love busy work. They love 30-minute coffee chats every morning by the water cooler just to catch up. They love gossip. They love the meeting before the meeting to prepare for the meeting, to build secret alliances so when you get in the meeting, you don't accomplish anything. They love the secret email chains, the secret Slack chain. They love all of that. And if you really think about it, the time that it takes them to eat up the energy, the motivation, the excitement, the clarity of the team through all of that noise and flurry, not only does it eat away at the team's productivity, but it really ensures that the team goes down such a deep, dark rabbit hole of unproductivity that they'll almost never get out. Like, I've worked jobs and I've seen in some of my clients where it's like people have been up to so many shenanigans for years to the point that you basically got to either fire or retire them just to start getting back to productivity. That is insane. And as the business leader, you are responsible for that. You are responsible for managing that. And you have to ask yourself, why am I allowing this to occur? Right? Like, why are you letting this go on like this? What does it do for you to watch this? Are you the person that's orchestrating this? Now, I done had this happen at a few jobs where it's like the supervisor is actually so incompetent and in over their head that they keep us just doing swirls of foolishness to the point that nothing gets done. I've actually had that happen at a few jobs and I can't stand it. I mean, I be ready to set it off, y'all. I be ready to set it off. Like, I can't take it. Like, it disturbs my spirit on just such a visceral level. I will also say that performance versus productivity, they are cousins, if not sisters, but they are not equal. And so be very careful to measure performance by productivity because they are not the same. They're not the same. Okay. Last point with this, when you're thinking about, you know, managing conflict as the business leader, is behavioral change. I don't care what people say they're going to do. I don't care how people feel about what they might do. Are you consistently adjusting your behavior to meet the updated expectation? We have adjusted expectations based on the resolution of this conflict. Have you adjusted those behaviors to meet the new need? If that person has not, technically the conflict has been managed, but it has not been resolved. A conflict cannot be resolved until somebody or everybody changes their behavior to reach new outcomes. Period. I don't want to hear all the reasons why you can't. I don't want to hear all the reasons why we not. Once we sit down and go through the conflict management process and come up with a plan and everybody gets a chance to empty out and we talk about all our feelings and all of the reasons why and this happened and then you said this, okay, we do that. We could even do that for weeks. But when it all comes down to it, I'm going to need you to change that behavior. I'm going to need you to change that behavior. And I'm going to need you to change that behavior too. And when you change your behavior and you change your behavior, these are the outcomes that we should be able to predict. Can we all agree on that? Okay, if we didn't come to the agreement, I shouldn't be checking in with you 3 weeks, 3 months down the line, and you still doing the same thing. And sometimes conflicts escalate, especially between colleagues, because one person puts in the work to make the change and somebody else does not. And they watching that person still be counted in positive performance or be counted in the team's productivity, even though they are digging their heels into the ground to still be on the same BS. You cannot allow that, not as a leader. And this is where you have to check your ego, because sometimes it's your favorite person. I talk in Evolution to Equity in my book about the roles that your teammates and your subordinates play to you as the leader. And one of the roles is the coddler, where it's like they feed your ego so much and they coddle and baby you so much as the leader, you will overlook their bad behavior all the time. Even though you might know in your heart that at the root of all the team's conflicts, somehow they playing a role, but you won't say nothing because they subsidize your immaturity. That's a you problem. That's a leader issue. And so as you are managing conflict as the leader, right, and you're thinking about outcomes, a part of those outcomes is going to be checking yourself to make sure that you are not enabling dysfunction because you refuse to require people to evolve the role that they play for you. Because everybody has a functional, operational, and a social role on a team. And if their social role is to be the empath for you or the coddler for you or your twin and y'all like freaking frack and y'all roll deep and they agree with everything you say, but you know they're a troublemaker, then guess what? You are just as much of a problem as they are. You hold equal, if not more, culpability because you actually have the power to change the situation and require behavioral change. So remember, behavioral change is not just on the two people or multiple people who we've identified as being in the conflict, but it's also on you as the leader and in some cases as the de facto mediator to check your ego about the role that these people play to feed you. Last point that I'll bring up, this also applies to families. You know, I have talked at length about a lot of the dysfunction in my family coming up. And when I talk to people about my mother in particular, actually, I think I did talk about this on the podcast. I mentioned how it was like nothing got done. It was like we just kept like circling the drain and just staying in these same cycles of dysfunction. It would look like we moving forward and then we wouldn't. It was just a mess. And when I think about performance, productivity, behavioral change for a family. Families are interesting because people are constantly aging. You know, work is different where when you have your job, if your job don't change, like you're probably doing the same stuff over and over again, regardless of age or things like that. But in families are constantly evolving because every member of the family is constantly shifting due to the life experience changes that naturally occur with age. So what, you know, I needed to do as the baby of the family when I was an actual infant and baby, It's totally different than when I was a teenager. It's totally different than when I became a young woman and was in college. And when I think about the family's productivity, as my brother and I were evolving our performance, you know, we were both heavily involved in extracurricular activities. And of course, you got school. And so my brother, because he ended up going to the military, he was in ROTC and drill team. I think he was on the swim team for a minute. Like, he did a bunch of stuff and he worked, right? Because we needed money, right? And so he took a job very early. And so he and I were very productive children, very productive. But the reason why I believe he and I constantly stayed in conflict with our parents was because no matter how productive we were, based on the social expectations, whether stated or unspoken, no matter how productive we were based on those expectations, it never led to success and successful performance for the family unit. So we could work as hard as possible. Like, we could go as hard as possible and it wouldn't matter because our mother was still our mother and had her ways and was stuck in her ways. And our father was still our father and he had his addictions. And you know, I mean, thinking about it now, I'll be honest, 9 times out of 10, both of our parents had undiagnosed mental illnesses. Our father definitely, I mean, clearly had substance abuse issues and significant problems with addiction. There were constant issues with underemployment, with poor money management, with just all out dysfunction, right? I mean, at best, we were working class, but we really were living in poverty. And, you know, I think about how so much of what my brother and I sought to accomplish in our youth was overcompensating so that we could at least hit break even as adults. And this is funny, I'm thinking about this now, because we were so desperate to just break even in life. At the very least. And I mean, it was different paths for both of us. Cause again, my brother, he was like pointing toward the military and the trades and like blue collar work, which he was always exceptionally good at. Like, I know, I think I've talked about this before, but like, we were little kids and my brother would just be building stuff, fixing stuff. Like, it was insane. This was completely self-taught, like a gift. It was nuts. And like, I was on this college prep path and wanted to be an attorney, but both of us, we worked our hands off just so that as adults, we could at least just break even in life because we saw the cycle. And at the same time, we saw almost a complete resistance to behavioral change. Like, when I think about it, and he and I, we talked about that, I think, at times when we were in our 20s and maybe like early 30s, it would be the simplest of behavioral changes that our parents could have made and they just would not do it. Like, and I think that's why I be going so hard on what I'm doing. I know that's why. I know it's why. Like, I've assessed this before. I know that's why. Because I just sat there and watched my mom like literally do the same stuff. And it was a little different for me as a girl. Because I'm like, this is my model of what womanhood looks like. Like, ladies, you not go, you know, and it was just, child was dysfunctional. But I bring up my foolishness from childhood because I want you all to be aware of the impact of how family dysfunction and family conflict mismanagement ties back into performance, productivity, and behavioral change, and how that impacts how you show up in other parts of your life. Because a part of the reason why I'm so resistant to collaboration or compromise is because I just watched for so many years where it's like, people are just not going to change. And so I've had to learn over the years where it's like, no, there's the possibility of reconciliation. You can, you know, treat people with respect and then also want to see people change. Like, there is a middle ground, but I just didn't see that growing up. So in my mind, I'm like, what it is what it is, and that's it. And I would challenge you, especially, you know, if you are the parents or the adults in the family, manage behavioral change. Manage your sense of family performance. What does family success look like for y'all? What would it look like for y'all, the whole family, to be successful? Like, what does it mean spiritually, emotionally, financially, intellectually, relationship-wise? Like, what does that look like? What does that look like? And then from there, get clear on what it looks like for everybody to be productive in that definition of performance, and then change your behaviors to meet that so you can achieve that. That's so important. And I think sometimes in families, we get so used to family dynamics and we just let it ride and we just never expect nothing to get updated or changed. But that's not healthy. That's not healthy. And it will impact how you show up in every other area of your life too. So I know I'm ending this on a very sober note. But I hope that resonates with you, because again, conflict management is not just about work. It's in every area of our life, and every area of our life deserves the care that we give to how we treat our workplace dynamics too. All right. On that note, let me know, what does success mean for you in your family structure and at work? How are you managing behavioral change? And what does it mean for you to be productive in your life? Let me know down in the comments. And of course, be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And I will catch you in the next one. Bye.